Thank you. Be seated. Court is ready to hear oral argument from petition appraisal review board versus Tex Air Helicopter.
Mr. Ben Bowers, petitioners. Petitioners have their 5 minutes of time.
As this court knows, respondent Tex Air has a helicopter fleet in Galveston that's used to take supplies to oil and gas facilities in the Gulf of Mexico. It's undisputed that Tex Air pays taxes on its helicopters only in Galveston County and claims no tax situs elsewhere. And yet they seek an allocation under Section 21.05 of the tax code. The issue then is whether applying Section 21.05 under these circumstances would constitute an unconstitutional tax exemption. And before I jump into the constitutional issue, let me remind the Court of what we think are two particularly troubling facts about Section 21.05 and how it works. First and foremost, this section does not require that the taxpayer establish a second tax status outside of Texas. That's a point we'll be coming back to again and again. No requirement of a second tax status. Second, according to the allocation
formula, why is that important?
Because it is said that an exemption not authorized by the Texas Constitution is null and void unless it's required by federal law. And I'll be arguing that if there is no second tax situs, nothing in federal law would require an allocation.
You cite two cases for that proposition about the exemption that unless it's required by federal law, it's null and void. Are there any other cases other than Aransas in Dallas County that you know of that stand for that proposition?
I'm sure there are. I cited those two cases because they're so factually on point in other respects in this appeal. But
are there any cases out of this court that say that?
I would have to look at the Enron decision again to see.
Well, Enron doesn't say that. I can say that.
I don't specifically recall.
Another case.
I cannot give you specifically a Supreme Court case offhand that says that, but it's been my impression that it's well settled in this city. If the Constitution does not authorize the exemption, the legislature cannot create it. And I'm sure there are Supreme Court cases that say that. The second prong of the analysis is that, well, if an exemption or some type of allocation is required by federal law due to, say, a double taxation problem, then federal supremacy kicks in, according to the U.S. Supreme Court. And then we have a problem, and perhaps something analogous to an exemption is required. The other interesting and troubling thing about 21.05 is this. According to the allocation formula, the more trips Tex Air makes to the Gulf, the greater the tax. That's how the formula works. The greater the portion of the value of the helicopters is taxable to Galveston County. The greater the number of revenue departures, the more Galveston County gets, according to the formula. Yet that contradicts the heart of Tex Air's position, which is that because they spend so much time in the Gulf in international waters without the benefits and protections of the state of Texas, because they spend so much time out there, they should get a tax break.
So you're saying that the statute not rationally related to its purpose, or what is the point?
If I say it's not rationally related to its purpose, you would ask me its purpose. I can't figure its purpose. I can't see how it was ever intended to apply in this type of situation. As applied to this situation, I would call it utterly arbitrary and capricious. I don't think whoever wrote this statute had a domicile carrier in mind The only way the statute makes any kind of superficial sense to me is if you have in mind an airline located in another state that comes into Texas, picks up people, and goes on. And if this state wanted to measure in some way that airline's use of this state, departures might make sense. The more departures, obviously, would mean the more the presence in this state, because they had to come here to leave. But when we're talking about a carrier domiciled in this state, and specifically in Galveston County, it just doesn't make any sense at all. So we have a taxpayer claiming they should get a break because they spend so much time outside Texas and make so many departures from Texas, and yet this taxpayer is invoking a statute which works just the opposite. The more departures, the greater the tax. According to the formula, if a helicopter makes 10 trips into the Gulf, only 0.17% of the value of the helicopter is taxable in this state. If it makes 200 trips, it goes up to roughly 3.4%, which I think is close to the facts in this case. If it makes 365 trips every day, then Texas gets 6.25%.
But you're attacking the formula there, not the statute per se. Maybe the formula doesn't accurately capture market value in the...
That's correct.
That's not the statute.
Well, it's Section B of the statute. Formula is a statutory formula, and it's just obviously something has gone wrong if that type of formula applies in this type of situation.
If it stays on the ground and makes one trip a year, and it's otherwise on the ground in Texas, how much is it?
One trip? I need my calculator, but it's going to be a fraction of 1%.
But there it's on the ground in Texas.
Well, if 10 trips is 0.17%, I guess one trip would be 0.017%. It just doesn't seem possible if the statute was written with this sort of situation in mind.
You don't raise that number here,
though. We haven't focused on the formula, but I wanted the court to be aware of the formula. I think it's an additional argument for why it is an unconstitutional exemption to apply to this statute. In this situation.
If this was a boat, would you be making the same argument?
There's a different statute that applies to boats, say, for example, shrimp boats that operate in the Gulf. That statute does not contain this formula. This formula is found in a special statute for commercial aircraft alone.
Your argument is it's not fair to it's not fair to permit this aircraft ought to be taxed at its full value when it is clear the allocation is designed to keep taxing authorities from taxing full value for equipment that's not in the state full time. So my question is, I'm not the shrimp boats. I've got a boat that takes passengers from Galveston out to the rig that's in international waters, spends a few days out there, and comes back to Galveston. Would your argument be any different? Would it be unconstitutional to permit the boat owner to say you shouldn't tax my boat for the time I'm spending out in international waters?
Yes, it would be the same argument, and yes, it would be unconstitutional. And in fact, that is precisely the holding of the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals in the Aransas County case, which found Section 21.03 unconstitutional. And that was a case dealing with the shrimp boats that spent considerable time in international waters, but never established a set of tax sites anywhere. And the Corpus Christi Court held, for the same reason we're arguing this statute is unconstitutional, that 21.3 was likewise unconstitutional. Not an exemption, not authorized by the Texas Constitution, and an allocation not required by federal law. So yes, it's the same idea. Boat, plane, it shouldn't matter. Absence from the state, mere absence from the state,
but you've
is
made
never
a
the reason for an allocation.
You made a facial challenge as well as an as-applied challenge. And at least with respect to the facial challenge, the statute's necessary to take into account the law that you say is the law. But you have to recognize under federal law, you cannot constitutionally tax certain portions of certain pieces of property that are taxed by other states.
That's correct. But this statute doesn't say anything about the need to establish a second tax size.
But it would apply to those kinds of situations. If this airplane were flying back and forth, or helicopters were going to Oklahoma every day, and would spend a day in Oklahoma and a day in Texas, the statute would not be unconstitutional as to that situation, would it?
Not Part A.
Not Part A.
I would still have a problem with Part B.
You don't challenge Part B.
That's right. That's really not the focus.
You don't challenge Part B in this court.
No, we would be focusing a lot more on Part B if we actually had a second tax size.
But Part A is unconstitutional under all sets of circumstances.
Not if it's... The only problem with Part A, this is an answer to your question, is that it provides for an allocation without regard whether the taxpayer has a second tax size. There's no requirement there. Now, if you want to read that requirement into the statute, then I guess that would save the statute's constitutionality on its face. And if you want to hold in a particular case that an allocation is constitutionally required under the federal constitution, you could hang your hat on Section 2105. You could likewise hang your hat on Section 2103, which is entitled interstate allocation, would accomplish the same thing. Or you could just make a you could do it even without a statute. I mean, the federal constitution is what's driving the need for an allocation in this case. But properly construed, 21A by itself, 21.05A by itself, and when I say properly construed requires second tax status elsewhere, would have no unconstitutionality on its face. Now, I guess the question I have is, if you read into it a requirement that there be a second tax situs, are you construing it or changing it? In Aransas County, the court said that 2103, similar provision, was unconstitutional on its face because it did not require proof of a tax situs elsewhere. If that's right, it would likewise apply here. The Court of Appeals understood that exemptions not authorized by Article 8 are null and void unless required by federal law. However, the Court of Appeals wrongly held that 21.05 was a valuation statute rather than an exemption. The problem with this analysis is threefold. First, as this court explained in Enron, a valuation statute is a statute that purports to measure or determines how to measure property value. Valuation. Section 2105 does not purport to measure the property value of the helicopter. Instead, it takes a given value, whatever it is, and then determines what part of that value goes untaxed. That's an exemption.
Can you say it another way, determines what value is taxed for the benefit of the...
Yes, it carves up the tax portion and separates it from an untaxed portion. But of course, we're concerned with the part that is declared non-taxable, the exemption part. But yes, you could say it both ways. We think the Court of Appeals misunderstood the Enron decision and misrelied on a Fort Worth decision called Terra Appraisal District versus Columbus Country Club. Those are two cases that upheld tax statutes as valuation statutes. And the cases were correctly decided. Those cases did not address 21.05. In Enron, this court held that the tax statute, which says inventory can be measured on September 1 or January 1, is a valuation statute and upheld it as such. In Tarrant Appraisal District, the statute providing that land use restrictions must be considered when determining that land's value was upheld as a valuation statute. Those cases are fine. They uphold provisions that determine when and how to measure value. Those statutes do not purport to exempt any part of that value. In contrast, 2105 doesn't determine value. It just determines what part goes untaxed and what part is taxed. Nothing there about a method of value.
Could the federal government impose tax if they so chose? for the time that these helicopters spend on the Outer Continental Shelf?
Don't know. I don't know if the federal government could or not. Nothing like that was ever suggested in this case. Are you suggesting that the federal? I'm not even aware that the federal government has ad valorem taxes.
And
when you say could they, if they make the necessary constitutional changes and necessary legislative changes, I guess I was brought up to believe the federal government could, because they go through all the right hoops to do whatever they want. But I'm not aware of any ad valorem tax plan in existence at the federal level. There are no federal ad valorem taxes.
If
someone came up with an idea to balance the budget by taxing everyone by the amount of time they spend in the ocean or overseas, I guess anything's possible.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ken. Court is ready to hear arguments from response.
May it please the court. Mr. Jack Holland will present arguments from response.
Good afternoon, learned members of this high court. This is my first occasion to appear before this body, and I am both honored and humbled by your invitation. I don't come here today to try to be creative or to make new law. I come here seeking this court's support to enforce the law as it has been written in this state for more than 100 years. My client is not a tax dodger. Indeed, my client pays taxes. He pays the taxes that are assessed against him in Galveston County. He pays the taxes that are assessed against his maintenance facilities in Harris County, where he maintains facilities. He comes here asking you simply to give him what the Constitution and the statutory rights that he's entitled to in this state. I think I should begin by simply relying on the case law that has been so thoroughly analyzed by this court, handed down, beginning in 1907 with the Shannon case. I think the issue before this court is simply whether the legislature has authority to set the parameters and guidelines and modes and methods determining how property is classified, taxed, not necessarily the amount of tax. But in Shannon, this high court said that the legislature indeed has constitutional grant of authority to set the parameters for ascertaining the value and classifying property for ad valorem tax purposes.
Well, let me ask you this. Assuming that this statute weren't on the books,
yes, Your Honor.
Is there anything that you know of that would prohibit Galveston from taxing the full value of the helicopters?
Other than what protection would be offered under federal constitutional protections, the 14th Amendment, the Due Process and Equal Protection Clause, I believe that was enumerated in the Central Railroad versus Pennsylvania case, which I cited in my brief. Other than that case, and cases subsequent to it, for example, the Complete Auto Transit case, I believe sets some guidelines. That was followed by Japan Lines. Now we have six different criteria to follow with respect to those properties that are taxed that are involved in interstate or international commerce. Since my client is in fact does operate as an interstate entity involved in interstate commerce, and I believe he would be subject to the protections offered by federal Congress.
But since no other taxing authority actually does tax the helicopters,
my client.
Do you know of any reason, assuming the statute weren't on the books, why Galveston County couldn't assess taxes on 100% of the value?
Justice Owens, other than what I've just quoted to you, that is, the fair apportionment and whether or not it's subject to the protections, the immunities, and privileges offered by the state for that period of time that it operates the state, my answer to you, madam, is no. I do not know of any other reason why they could not tax it 100%.
Mr. Holland, would you briefly address Mr. Bauer's argument that the formula, would you address the argument that the formula has the opposite effect? The more trips you make offshore, the more you're taxed. And it seems to be very illogical to be working in the opposite direction.
Justice Gonzalez, that sort of issue, sir, and I'm not going to try to circumvent your question, but that formula was created, of course, by the legislature. We must assume that they were acting in a rational manner. They do that occasionally. When they created that, that issue was somewhat addressed in the Republic Insurance versus Highland Park Independent School District case, where a similar statute, although it wasn't a formula, it was still a constitutional challenge on a statute that allowed the insurance companies to deduct their reserves off of the gross value of their assets for tax purposes. So you see, it wasn't a formula exactly, but it had the same effect of reducing the taxable value of their assets. Again, the same sort of a situation arose in the Enron case. I believe that Justice Owen wrote the unanimous opinion for this court, where the tax statute in question was attacked on a constitutional basis. Much of their attacking 2105. And that is that the inventory, part of it went untaxed because they were allowed to use an alternative date for taxation purposes, and thus their inventory was down. I can't tell you, sir, I can't really address how that formula worked. I've never sat down a computer. But the legislature obviously must have had in mind more than just Texair in Galveston County, for surely we have American Airlines, every airline in the country flying into this state. And they obviously are given an allocation. And it may not be based on that precise formula, but I do know that they are not taxed 100% in the state there because of the interstate apportionment requirements. Again, a tax statute that's taxed in a similar manner under Tarrant Appraisal District versus the Colonial Country Club. Same idea. We're going to value this property at less than fair market value because the statute allows us to do that when we consider the use that the land is put to. Actually, it has the effect of lowering the value. It lowers the taxes, obviously. And in retrospect, if you apply that formula, it has the ultimate effect of lowering the taxes. Does it lower the value? Well, you know, it's kind of a hybrid argument. If you're going to give these people that are entitled to an apportionment that are not required to be taxed 100% because of the nature of their operations within the state of Texas and other states, how are you going to do it? Well, you can create a formula like the legislature did, or you can just turn around and say, okay, we're just going to let you value the aircraft at less than market value. But how are you going to arrive at that when the law says that to be fair and equitable, all the property has to be valued at fair market value? I don't know how you arrive at that. The legislature would probably have to address that. If, in fact, this court finds that formula somehow infringes upon the King's person's right to take everything that the foreign press has. And I just don't know how you otherwise arrive at that. You know, every 2 years, this gang of bandits next door meets in a smoke-filled room to figure out how to pick the pockets of the king's subjects, and there's no end to it. The only protection that these people have is this high court from the tyranny of the minorities. And so they somehow manage to come out the front door with that formula. And I'm not certain that I'm answering your question, sir, but I may not be capable of doing it. But I have not set down and worked that formula out.
I'm just amused by calling our elected representative a gang of bandits.
Well, that's what they remind me of, the way they treat the rest of us. Let me go on further. A similar question was raised in the Travis Central Appraisal District versus the FM Properties case. That was another constitutional attack on a statute. And in that case, they were trying to assess the property that was used for development purposes as an individual lot as opposed to a unit. The same thing, the same argument comes up. By appraising the property at fair market value based on individual units, you're reducing, you would be increasing the value of the property, hence the amount of taxes that would be raised. And the Austin court held that, again, the legislature has the authority, has the constitutional authority to devise the methods and means of valuing property. I'm sure that this court would agree, through all of its opinions, that all taxation is not really equal and uniform in this state. It's impossible to arrive at that center point. Just by the nature of the animal of taxation and the things that have to be taxed, it's just an impossibility. We try to arrive at what is fair and reasonable. And to suggest that these people are entitled to tax my client's property 100% simply because they're not taxed someplace else is ludicrous. Why? Well, my clients could be taxed in Louisiana, but they're not. Why? Well, the state of Louisiana, for whatever reason, maybe to promote economic industry, economic expansion, don't want to tax them. You tell me, what fire truck from Galveston County is going to show up at an oil platform out there to help my client? What emergency medical technician is going to find himself out in the Gulf trying to help one of my client's employees? The argument is that they're only entitled to tax him in proportion to the services and the benefits that they offer. It's not very much. Frankly, my client had to pay 100% tax on his property down here in this state. He could not compete with those operators that operate out of the state of Louisiana. He'd have to move his company out of this state.
Is there evidence in the record that he could be subjected to tax in Louisiana?
Yes, Your Honor, there is. And by the way, I must apologize if I'm speaking kind of loud because I have a hearing impairment that's non-correctable. And I would appreciate it if you would consider when you asked me to talk a little louder. I really don't hear you that well, ma'am. And I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am, he is. He maintains a maintenance facility and a refueling stop at Abbeville, Louisiana. Furthermore, he has to, under his contract with some of these oil companies, he has to keep at least one helicopter on call in Louisiana 24 hours a day. But he does rotate his equipment, of course, but one is always on call. In addition to that, he does a considerable amount of flying back and forth from these platforms to and into the state of Louisiana, hauling men and materials. In the record, you will see that he makes certain revenue departures from the state of Texas. But we classify a revenue departure as simply taking off because every time that helicopter lifts off, it's considered a revenue departure. Now, it may fly over to Louisiana and deposit men and materials or pick up men and materials and then depart for offshore. When it does, that is another revenue departure, all in the period of one day. When these ships get out on those platforms, the oil company may say, Mr. Beeney, I want you to take these two men over to another platform, or I want you to take this material back to New Orleans or Morgan City, or I want you to pick this up. They depart and go back. That is also a revenue departure. So when you see all those revenue departures in the record there, literally what they are lifts off and landings, and they may make an enormous number of them every day, flying around the Gulf and back and forth. He could be taxed by Louisiana Justice Owen, but at this time he is not. But I will remind the court that the Central Railroad case, and we have a late case here in Texas is Harris County Appraisal versus Transamerica Container. Now, that was decided by the First Court of Appeals in 1995. That case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court and back. But both Central Railroad and Harris County versus Transamerica have stated and hold that it matters not whether the property is actually being taxed elsewhere. Under our federal scheme of things, all that matters is whether or not that property is subject to being taxed. Not necessarily taxed. And the King's Bursar wants 100% of my client's tax because he's not being taxed someplace else. Now, let's assume that Galveston does get 100% of the tax. And then, lo and behold, Louisiana comes along and says, based on these same facts, now you guys fly in here, we're going to tax you. Well, we know that there can't be double taxation, multiple taxation in the commerce. So now that that $100 that they're getting, they've got to give the state of Louisiana part of it, some part of it. So I ask you, if the king is not entitled to it then, why is he entitled to it now? If he gets it now, he's taking money that he's really not entitled to. If you think about it in a roundabout way, maybe that's where that formula really comes into play. He's not entitled to any more than what the state says he's entitled to the federal government. I've tried to be as brief as I can. I don't want to take up any more of your precious time. I know how busy you are. It's been an honor being here today. Can I answer any more questions?
Anything further? Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Chief Justice Phillips. And thank you, members of the court.
Talking about whether there is anything apart from 21.05 that would keep Galveston from taxing these helicopters for their full value. If I understood counsel correctly, I think the answer was no. But I'd like to nail that down and not just rely on his answer, because I do believe the answer is no. And the answer is found in the U.S. Supreme Court case called Central Railroad. According to that case, a taxpayer cannot avoid a domicile's property tax merely by showing that property is temporarily absent from the state. That case involved railroad cars that spent a great portion of the time outside Pennsylvania, but not on regular or fixed schedules. And the court held that Pennsylvania could fully tax those railroad cars even though they were used elsewhere. So the mere fact that property is absent from the state is never enough to limit a county's power to tax that property fully.
Is the opposite then true, that a state can decide that it doesn't want to tax property that's not there all the time 100% and do as this statute does? And if so, what prohibits that?
There's nothing that prohibits the state from not taxing. Certainly nothing in law. Texas does not have to have a property tax if it doesn't want to. And if it wants, I think that's true. I've never really considered it. We've been more concerned with the limits of its taxing power.
Do you concede that these helicopters, one or more of them, could be taxed in Louisiana, or some portion of them?
No, I don't.
Why not?
Well, according to the Central Railroad, it's the taxpayer's burden to prove that property has acquired a tax status elsewhere. And by tax status, the Supreme Court equates this with a permanent location elsewhere. It's the taxpayer's burden to prove that in order to get an allocation, and in order to benefit from the Commerce Clause and Due Process Clause as a justification for an allocation. In this case, the taxpayer did not do that. The taxpayer never established a second tax status, even before the field said that. Never established a second tax status. Of course, it didn't matter to the court because they didn't think they were getting an exemption.
Well, is the statute unconstitutional because it doesn't require that?
Yes. Yes, because it does not require proof of a second tax status. If there's no second tax status, there is no requirement. There is no federal rule that would require that Galveston tax at less than full value. It's only when you have a second tax status, it's only when you have a double taxation problem that some type of allocation can be federally required. But you have to establish the tax status, the permanent location elsewhere, not just the fact that it leaves the state temporarily. In this case, taxpayer did not establish the tax status elsewhere. More fundamentally, taxpayer never even claimed to have a tax status elsewhere. Never claimed it. Never claimed that they were taxable in Louisiana. First I heard of it was today. If you look at the trial record, and that's what counts, what was the case presented at trial? What were the arguments there? It was just that we're out in international water. No one's going to come help us. We shouldn't have to pay them. never claimed to have a tax status elsewhere. Now, if there is any evidence of Louisiana tax status, it would have to be in the two-page affidavit of Texair's president. That's the only evidence that could possibly be relevant to this matter, and that's in the transcript of the clerk's record at 60 and 61. But according to that affidavit, the president of Texair says all revenue departures are from Shoals Field in Galveston County. All of them. That's what the affidavit says. It says 90% of the time is spent in international waters. There are some references to Louisiana. There is a reference in that affidavit about a plane that is stationed in Cameron. I'm not quite sure what I heard about Abbeville, Louisiana, but there's nothing in the record about Abbeville. I've never heard of Abbeville. That's not in the record.
Any other questions? Thank you. That concludes the oral argument in the final case, and it concludes our submission for today. The marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise.